happening. So, again, if you think I'm hitting the ground running this morning kind of way, I am. Because I wish I had time to go over everything that we looked at last night, but I can't do that this morning. Because I'm never going to get to these principles that we want to talk about. And there were some powerful principles we have to activate in our life last night in order for us to even understand the rest of this. This is how critical it is. Listen, do you understand that Yosef was put in the position? Now I want you to understand, he's standing before the most powerful man in the world. And if he's not standing there, he can't prevent the global crisis. And I feel that matches us today. We're at the brink of a global crisis. And he's trying to position us so we can help during this global crisis. This is what Yosef said there for. He don't even know. Yosef has no idea yet why he's standing before the Pharaoh. But here we have Pharaoh makes this statement, and we'll take up where we started last night, 38. And Pharaoh said, verse 38 to 41. I want you to look at it. And Pharaoh said to his servants, who is these servants we keep bringing up? Remember we talked about last week? Those are the wise ones, the smart ones, the magicians, the soothsayers. There was no more wiser people. If you took the cream of the crop, that was those servants. The cream of the crop. Now, the way it worked in Egypt or Mitzrayim is he would have all his servants, and they'd be all standouts. But nobody stood out as much as Pharaoh stood out. Yet him and Yosef has this encounter, and Yosef's going to start to speak to him concerning, you got to seek out a wise man. And what he was saying, he didn't even realize, and you're not it. That's hard to swallow for Pharaoh. But do you understand? He believes the dream interpretation so much. He believes Yosef's basically prophesying. He believes the prophet so much that we're on the brink of a global crisis. If we don't do nothing, everybody loses. I wonder if the world believes the prophets today about the global crisis that we face. Is anybody saying anything about it? Is there any prayerfulness toward that? Are we at least putting our face before God concerning it, even? Did you know that just last night in Melbourne, Australia, that they blew up a synagogue? Think about that. And after they went through all the debris, the only thing that remained was the Torah scrolls. There's a photo online, you can go look at it. There's four or five Torah scrolls still in their wrappings and everything. Now the building is demolished, but the Torah scrolls are just sitting there. And this is not the first time stuff like this has happened. This has happened throughout generations. We've seen where the enemy will come in to seek to destroy. Because what purpose? What's the purpose of blowing up the synagogue? What's the purpose in it? Other than you're not against that people, you're against their God. You're against the message that God has wrote to his people. And listen to me. I got to ask you a question today. Can God write a book to his people? Can God write a book to his people? Well, we see that in the Torah. That's exactly what he did. He wrote a book to them. And in that book he wrote, and we have it today, still today, and it's been the most reprinted, redistributed, translated book in the entire world, in all of literature. There's been no literature that's been more reprinted and sold all over the world than the Bible. How important is that? Because you can't destroy. He said, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word will never pass away. You can't destroy it. And this should something, it should be some importance to us. Yet we're here at liberty. We can read it as much as we want. It's not being taken from us. And then sometimes we fail to do that. So last night I was dealing with, you're going to continue down that path. That path won't change as long as you're trying to serve God and do whatever you're doing in the flesh. That's what it'll be. There'll be no consistency. There'll be nothing that you'll see in your life that's going to be something that you do every single day. Remember we talked about that last night? Looking at the word ruach in its original language, it means man outside. Because that's where you impact things. That's where things get strong at. So you can go so many different directions when you talk about that, because comfort is inside. And now you're sheltered in, and basically, what you do when you're inside? You take your shoes off. You get in the recliner and you lay back. You're inside. So what is it doing outside? Well, it's storming right now. I'm glad I'm inside. We all love that stuff. But when you're inside, you've been sheltered. And you're glad the shelter's there and you didn't wait too late to get a shelter. You're glad that you have a place. Understand that serving God, we come inside the shelter, but then we're discipled to go outside and start doing the job he asks us to do. But when he sends us out, does he send us out without the ruach? No. He would never do that. But the ruach, in order for the ruach to stay with us, we have to acknowledge that he's here. We have to acknowledge that he's our strength, our help, our dunamis, which gives us exousia to do the job that God's called us to do. It makes you feel like a different person. When you've been given authority, you walk differently. You know, when you have a guy that thinks he's going to go in the police force, so he's going to go in the police force. Well, you know, he's going to go through some basic training and stuff like that. And the day that they graduate him, they put a gun on their hip and a badge on him, he comes out a little different attitude than when he went in. Now he's got exousia, not dunamis. Understand that. They didn't give him dunamis. He's got exousia. Now how do we convert that exousia, that authority, to the dunamis thing? Is he has to recognize, and he has to make sure he never forgets that somebody paid in order for him to be in that position. And I'm trying to avoid as much as I can talking about Hosea this morning. I don't know if you've ever read it, the minor prophet Hosea. But if you read it slow, you really figure out what's going on there. Here's a prophet who's told, go down and marry Gomer. Take her for a wife. So he did. She has the first child, brings it to the prophet. He's looking at him. Something ain't right. I don't even know if this is my kid. Then she has the second child. brings it to the prophet. This one's not mine either. This is the prophet now. The prophet Hosea. So he gets upset about it. He yells, divorce, divorce. And we can all say he has all the rights in the world. What's going on here? So then Gomer's taken and she's put on a for sale rack, for lack of better explanation, because he got rid of her. Put on a for sale rack, and while she's on the rack, he says, Hosea, go down and buy her back. Are you kidding me, God? Go down over there and you buy her back. What was he doing this for, to Hosea? He was wanting to get him to understand something. That's exactly how I've been treated. This is what I've been through. I loved you, and you treated me this way. Not once, but twice. So you go back and buy her back. God, you mean to tell me I got to go back and buy her back after all this? You go buy her back. That's what I've been through. God's wanting us to know we didn't just all show up and everybody had it right. We've all had our ups and downs and we've been in and out. But there's no time for that right now. You're standing before the Pharaoh, is what he said to yourself. It's no time to have regrets. It's no time to have retribution because your brothers did what they did. Son, you're about to save the world. You got to get this right. You got one shot at it. And I believe we're at our one shot time right now. I believe it with all my heart. We're there. And we got to understand that things get difficult in life. They get very difficult. But let me tell you, we were just like that. And Hosea, it seems like you talk about went through it. This fellow went through it. Because I don't know how many of us would have went and bought her back. But he sent his only son. He said, go buy him. Yeah. Well, Father, what is it going to cost me? You're probably going to have to die. This ought to matter to us. It ought to matter to us a lot. It ought to matter. He said, you're probably going to have to die. But I love her so much. I love her so much. I know it's been difficult. I know sin is ugly. Sin is very ugly. But God's trying to push the sin away. And he's trying to let us know, I want her. And that's how he cares about us. When he looks at you, that's how he cares about you. So you're talking about, you know, people don't understand how hard it is when the flesh. Yeah, he understands. Trust me, he understands. When we're dealing with the flesh. But he gives us some options here. And the options are that he's telling us. If you walk in the spirit, you don't fulfill the lust of the flesh. Because remember, it's a lust that you fulfill. And so we see this wonderful principle laying out. And I was reading through all of this, and I had this, trust me, I got way more than I need, 10 times more than I need. I didn't need Hosea at all. But I found myself reading through the book of Hosea and read through it again. I was like, God, this is serious stuff. Hosea is a snapshot of a real life situation that God's trying to show the prophet. Listen, if you want to know how I feel, this is it. This is what Israel done me. This is how Israel treated me. Yeah, you know what I did? I bought her back. And we get to be grafted into that. We think we could come in and change the rules. We think we can come in and do it the way we want to do it. How dare we? What audacity we walk around in sometimes to think we can change it. We don't get to change it. We ought to appreciate the opportunity we get to step outside. I got up this morning and I felt so good. I said, God, I just thank you. And then I know, I asked Charlotte, I said, is it cool outside? She said, yeah, it's a little cool. So I sit in the living room and I watch the sunlight. And it's not direct, it's indirect because I'm looking toward the west out the kitchen window. But I can see it brightening up. And I said, well, it's time. It's time. And it's my time to step outside. And when I stepped outside the door, it was like wind just flooded me. Because God was, not only was he expecting that to happen, he was going to see if it would happen. Because you can't ask God for revelation and mysteries to be revealed if you're not consistent. You have to be consistent. The weather don't get to dictate your consistency. None of those things come into play. One of the things we got to do is throw the excuse book away. And so we have Yosef standing before the most powerful man in the world. And here we are as the church. We've been positioned. And if God revealed everything to us, it would scare you to death. With the potential of this world facing in a very short period of time. Amen. And there's no escaping it. There's no escaping it. And so what we need to do is we need to set our hearts toward him. And so this statement in this 38th verse, and Pharaoh said to his servants, could we find another like him? Now, when he says him, we know that he's referencing Yosef here. A man in whom is the spirit of Elohim. Let me see that. This is so much power in this one verse. I have not done justice to this one verse, I'm sure of it. But I try to do the best I can to look at it careful. And so I took you through a series of different parts of this verse to try to bring some clarity to it. And I went through Romans. How many remember we went through Romans last night? And we looked at the word flesh. We looked at the word flesh because Romans, at the beginning, it deals with flesh a lot. As a matter of fact, flesh is spoken of in that Romans. All the way to verse 13, it's 12 or 13 times. The word flesh is dealing with it. So this is not something that is surprising. But that word flesh is very interesting because flesh is not just the stuff under your skin. It's the Greek word 4561 in the Strong's. It's zerx. It can mean the meat of animals or humans. The body, as opposed to soul and spirit. Because we're dealing with a different component. Man is spirit. He has a soul and lives in a body. Man is spirit. He has a soul. He has emotion. He has a mind. And it's contained in something. Body. The Bible makes reference of the spirit of man. You ever met him? Man's spirit was the perfect key fit with God's spirit at the beginning of creation. Man's spirit was the perfect key fit. Then sin entered in and God disconnected. God is spirit. And when sin entered, God had to disconnect from sin because you're not going to sit around and associate with sin. You know, folks are just living a life of sin and talking about they're praying and all this stuff. Okay. It don't work like that. Matter of fact, the scripture's clear. It says a man who rejects the Torah, even his prayers aren't heard. His prayers are an abomination. You ever wonder what prayers that abomination sound like to God? You don't want your prayers to be an abomination. These are all words you can write down and go look up on for yourself. What does it mean to be an abomination? And so what we see happening here with this word flesh is very key because we know that it's man's body. But it comes from a root word, zoroo, and that's G4563, and that means to brush off. You ever seen that motion before? You're hanging out with folks, somebody walks in, says a bunch of stuff, and they leave, and somebody goes. You know, that just didn't happen on its own. That's a real thing. It's a real word. You're saying, it don't bother me. Good riddance. So it means to brush off. It also means a broom or to sweep. So if I took a broom out here, and usually I do all that, but I don't want you to get so caught up with the broom that you miss my words here. It also means to use it as a broom or to sweep something under. Like put it under the rug. You sweep it under the rug. Deal with it later. Deal with it later. This is all from flesh. That's what flesh does. Flesh, don't want it. Let's not resolve the issue. Huh. Good riddance. Or sweep it under the rug. And then, you ever looked under the rug that you've been sweeping under? Or under the bed, wherever you're putting it? It's still there. It still has to be dealt with. You can do all this you want. It's still there. It's still deep inside of you. You might be you're on a winning streak and your happy days are there. And you're not feeling it. But guess what? When you're standing before the most powerful man in the world and now it's time to count, all that stuff will come flooding back on you if you operate in the flesh. If you operate in the flesh, it'll all come flooding back all at one time. Because let me tell you, Yosef was a real person. He had real feelings, just like we have today. And let me tell you about Yosef. Now he's got a perfect opportunity to get his revenge. And he's still dealing with flesh. Now he has a perfect opportunity. But why didn't he take it? It's perfect. They won't even recognize me. I could kill them all. They won't even know who did it. It's the perfect assassin. Let's not forget, he was kept by the assassin for 13 years. It would have been perfect. He'd have got away with it. You know why he didn't do it? He was led by the Spirit. Led by the Spirit. Very key. And so, again, this is some of the things we looked at. Now, it goes to a different, another root word, and that's zoru. It means to sweep clean by sweeping. And again, all of this is dealing with flesh. And so I read Romans 8 all the way through. Can I just read it again? I normally wouldn't do it, but since you gave me the okay, I might as well read it again. That way you get it in context. Romans 8, verse 1. There is then now no condemnation to those who are in Messiah Yeshua. No condemnation. Remember, there's no one to condemn you when you're in Messiah Yeshua. If you're not in Messiah Yeshua, you're condemned already. And we think, well, that person's condemning me. That person's condemning me. No, you're condemned already because you're not in Messiah. If you was in Messiah, you wouldn't even hear the condemnation of others. Because there is now no condemnation to them who are in Messiah Yeshua, who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. Now that word Spirit there is pneuma in the Greek. Now we hadn't gotten there yet, but we'll get there later. I didn't talk about it last night. For the Torah of the Spirit of the life in Messiah Yeshua has set me free from the Torah of sin and death. Very important. Now, I'm not sure why in these different cases here. Cases, I mean, how they capitalize things in translation. Because there's in the original writings, there's no capitalization. Just wrote. Especially in Hebrew. Hebrew is all caps. Because when you start by bias or feeling, putting a cap somewhere to draw emphasis to something or to heighten some word, it can go all over the place. In this case, we see in our translation here, for the Torah of the Spirit of the life, it's a little T Torah. You see that little T? If you look at the verse 3, it says, for the Torah, capital T, being powerless. So even this translation, I don't know where they're going with this. So forget the capitalization. Could you do that while I'm reading it? Let me just read it to you. And what he's saying, it says, for the Torah of the Spirit of the life in Messiah Yeshua has set me free from the Torah of sin and death. So what should be emphasized is the capital T Torah has set me free from the little T Torah. Why does the little T Torah have to be there? Because it's the negative of the Torah. You see what I mean? The Torah has a negative? Yes, it tells you if you covet, there's a consequence. That's the negative of it. If you do this, if you murder, there's a consequence. If you steal, there's a consequence. If you commit adultery, there's a consequence. That's the negative of the Torah. You got to be set free from that. For the Torah being powerless, in that it was weak through the what? What makes the Torah powerless? Flesh. Keep that in mind. Flesh is what makes the Torah powerless. Not the Torah's powerless. And that's why people believe this. They read this Paul and they say, oh yeah, Paul said the Torah is powerless. Really? Well, maybe I need to read him again because I'm getting confused here about you saying Paul said the Torah is powerless. Let me read it to you the way he said it. For the Torah being powerless in that it was weak through the flesh. What makes the Torah powerless? Flesh. Flesh. Why? Because flesh is disconnected now. There's a disconnect. And now it's kind of the ruler of the spirit of man. The spirit of man was the ruler. It was the perfect fit with God's spirit. Been disconnected. Now flesh is the ruler of the spirit of man. And you thought you were just, you couldn't figure out why you was like you was. So you had to go to the doctor and get on whatever to figure you out. I just got to calm my nerves. I got to settle myself down. I got to hit the little wine so I can go to sleep at night. You're trying to figure you out, and God already figured you out. What I need to do is I need to get your spirit alive again. Your spirit's got to be in charge of your flesh. Your spirit's got to tell the flesh to sit down and shut up. That's what I got to do. That's what I'm going to do. And it's not going to take, I don't know the names of these things, but it's not going to take, what's the Z one they, everybody was for? Xanax, Prozac, I don't even know, but it don't take none of that. It don't take drugs, it don't take liquor, it don't take women, none of these things. It don't take none of those things to straighten you up. What a man's problem is he don't know how to fix the flesh. He'll never know how to fix the flesh. Only God can fix it for him. Now I'm going to show you, how do you know you're not being led in the flesh? For the Torah being powerless in that it was weak through the flesh, Elohim sent his own son in the likeness of flesh. Of sin. How do we know that flesh is attached to sin? He's telling us. He said he sent his son in the likeness of flesh of sin. And concerning sin, condemned sin in the flesh. He condemned sin. And so, if Yeshua, our Messiah, the one we're supposed to be following, because that's what it means to be Christian, Christ-like, we're Christ followers, we're small Christ's, we're little, you know, we're walking around, little Jesus is all over. However you want to put it to help you remember. He condemned sin in the flesh. But you think you can't. That don't make sense to me. He condemned sin in the flesh, but you can't. It's not that you can't, you just don't want to. Now what he does, he says, do what I do. Believe what he believed. Trust in what he trusted in. Preach what he preached. Live how he lived. And all of a sudden, the flesh is a small thing. And now the spirit's much bigger. He says this. He condemns sin in the flesh so that the righteousness of the Torah. The what? Did I just say that? The righteousness of the Torah should be complete in us who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the spirit. If the Torah is not good at all, what's the righteousness of the Torah? If the Torah is to be done away with, then why is he telling us here in Romans? In Romans, let's not forget, I'm in Romans. I know I'm sounds like I'm reading out the Torah, but I'm in Romans. So that the righteousness of the Torah should be complete in us who do not walk according to the what? Flesh. We don't walk according to the flesh. Just the attitude, I'll deal with it later. That's all flesh. All flesh. But according to the Spirit. For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on matters of the flesh. That's where their appetites are. That's the stuff they like. That's the things they want to do. That's the places they want to go. That's the things they like to, that's the people they like to hang out with. They set their minds on the things of the flesh. Do you understand that scripture? This is not, so it's not shocking. So you can all, why does he tell us this way? So you can see where you are. You know where God's people want to be when he's at Shabbat? You know where God's people want to be? Where he's at? They set their mind on it. If you don't set your mind on it during the week, your mind's going to be on something else. Whatever you set your mind on, that's what you're going to do. You start thinking about it all week, and before you know it, you talk yourself right into it. We have to start setting our mind on the things that of the righteous part of the Torah. We have to. Now, let's understand, there is a negative in the Torah, and that's hard for people that admit that. But remember, he says, I want you to put them on Mount Gerizim and Mount Hebel. Separate them. And so he's telling us, he says, those we're going to speak blessings and those will be the curses. Because there's curses if you don't obey the Torah. That's the negative part of it. That's what Christ set us free from. The negative part of it. He set us free from those things. And so when people talk about, well, Christ set us free from the Torah, they think he set us free from all of it. I don't understand how you get there. It's a simple reading, comprehending, when you read the text, it's so clear. For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on matters of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit, matters of the Spirit. So you're going to start realizing I got more control of the flesh. And let me tell you, control of the flesh is not my job. I got enough to deal with. You know, what do you think this is? If you can't control you, you want somebody else to? And the sad thing is, that's what happens in relationship. We think if I find the right one, he'll calm me down. Ha ha. Good luck with that. You're the only one can calm you down. There ain't no person come and fix this for you. Now we know that Messiah came to fix it for the whole world, but we got to obey him. But you are your own worst enemy. It's the enemy in me, enemy that we're fighting all the time. For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on matters of the flesh. That's a dead giveaway. I mean, when you show up, if you say, like I said last night, it's Friday evening, you say, party, woo! They show up with their little pointed hat on, their martini glasses. I heard somebody say, party. Your mind is set on matters of the flesh. It's just like that. It don't matter who you're going with. It don't matter where it's at, whose house it is. Not to mention, you really want it going good. Hit the right tune on the radio. and you got my attention. Mine is set to matters of the flesh. It's catchy things. And the enemy knows that. Our whole world is built on trying to get your attention. They're doing an advertisement. It's all to get your attention. It's to draw your focus to whatever they're trying to sell. I mean, let's not even talk about this, but I might as well since it's right here. When they're ready for you to buy a new one, they make you buy a new one. And when you don't buy it, they say it's free. But let me just tell you, there's nothing free. Am I telling the truth? Advertisement is already won. Let's not try to think we didn't buy into it. We all bought into it. They dumped trillions of dollars in the advertisement and tracking you and figuring out what you like, and now they got it. They got all the data. Because, you know, they say, well, we've got all these free apps. They're free. These face recognitions. And so now you're sitting there and your phone's, you know, you got it on the table and you're talking about, man, I would sure like to have some chicken wings. And all of a sudden your phone goes bleep, 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 bleep. You got 10 advertisements for chicken wings. How in the world is that possible? If I lost my mind, is that a real thing? Now, you said something to somebody else, and your phone responded with these advertisements. Or you say, you know, I was thinking about buying a truck. Ford calls you next week 3 times. There's no escaping it. The hope we have is that we realize, don't set your mind on things of the flesh. Don't set your mind there. Because once the mind is captivated, it's hard for it to break free from it. It's a fight. It's not just going to go away on its own. You got to fight it off. And you got to fight it off. And you keep fighting it off and keep fighting it off and keep fighting it off. And eventually you'll have a relief from it. So those who live according to the flesh set their minds on matters of the flesh. Those who live according to the Spirit, matters of the Spirit. For the mind of the flesh is, the mind of the flesh is what? Death. That ought to scare us right there. The mind of the flesh is death, but the mind of the Spirit is life and peace. Who wants the latter? Who wants the latter? And that's exactly what the world's calling for right now. Peace. Life and peace. Let's stop all the wars. That's kind of one of Trump's agenda things. We're going to have peace and all this stuff. The issue is time's up. Time's up. But we'd much rather the latter. And so what we have to do is make sure that we as individuals live after the Spirit. Because the mind of the flesh is enmity toward Elohim. The mind of the flesh is enmity. This is a key verse. Very key. The mind of the flesh is enmity toward Elohim. It does not subject itself to the Torah of Elohim, neither indeed is able. How many see that? Does not subject itself to what? The Torah? I thought the Torah was over with by now. What you mean the mind of the flesh has to subject itself to the Torah of Elohim? Because the mind of the flesh is enmity toward Elohim, it does not subject itself to the Torah of Elohim, neither indeed is able. You see that? Because you can't live the Torah in the flesh. We've had a few folks try that. You can't live the Torah in the flesh. It's impossible. Only in the Spirit. Eventually, you're going to get tired, and you're going to go do the very same things you ran from. Because you're trying to do it in the flesh. You can't do it. It's impossible to do it. He's telling us that. If you try to do the commands that God has given you to do in the flesh, you'll never succeed. Never succeed. Only in the spirit. That's why I said a long time ago, I said, if you even attempt to live this lifestyle without set apart spirit, you've lost your mind. Because you're starting a losing battle. And you have no possibility of ever winning because you can't do it in the flesh. Your flesh is going to trick you. Your flesh is going to give you every excuse there is. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. That's what the flesh is there. It's the opposer. It opposes you from ever coming back into congruency with that perfect fit. And if we don't get congruent with our Father, we're going to be in trouble. And those who are in the flesh are unable to please Elohim. Unable. Yet I see many people try it. That's what I said about worship. Many people try it. You know, it's time for worship. And worship to them is when they sing the song, especially the one this morning. Oh, get the hands up. And they want to make sure somebody's watching me. And it satisfies the flesh. The flesh can get satisfied so easy. I mean, you give the flesh a Coke and a Snickers, satisfied. A one-night stand. The flesh gets satisfied very easy. The only thing they don't realize, it wants it again the next day. It never gets, it's truly never satisfied, but it appears to be. And so they, you know, go to service. It could be Shabbat, whatever it is. Hands up, and they think they worship. Hadn't obeyed God none of the rest of the week. None of that. No obedience to God. No consistent praying. No consistent spending time with God. And they don't realize that this means nothing to him. This arm swinging, drawing attention, you're not impressing God. You might impress everybody else. They may say, oh man, he got it. He really got it. He good. And God's going, what is this? You know what impresses him? When you woke up that morning, and it was just a Monday. And you say, Father, I thank you for loving me. And then Tuesday you did the same thing. And Wednesday and Thursday and Friday you did the same thing. Then when you do this, that's worship. That's a real act of worship because you obeyed him throughout the week. He can receive it. Other than that, what is there to receive? You've been disobedient all week and now you think it's a great fix. I'm just going to fix it all. I'm going to show up, do my part. That don't do anything for God. That don't impress God. And you're trying to build relationship? We have to be consistently involved with the relationship throughout the week. Verse 9 says, but you are not in the flesh, but in the spirit, if indeed the spirit of Elohim dwells in you. Now we're getting to the latter part of this, dealing with the flesh. You're not in the flesh, but in the spirit, if indeed the spirit of Elohim dwells in you. Now we're back to the same statement that Pharaoh made about yourself. We find that same statement here in Romans 8:9. Same statement. He said, you're not in the flesh, but in the spirit, if indeed the spirit of Elohim dwells in you. Same thing yourself. It's been set up. And here we have somebody who shouldn't even understand this concept, but God performs a miracle, opening up his understanding to let Pharaoh peer into some phenomenon. Now, what caused him to see the phenomenon is nobody else of all this group that's there was able to interpret the dream, but Yosef was able to. So now we have that verse 9, very important for us. If anyone does not have the spirit of Messiah, this one is not his. So is it a qualifier to be his? Absolutely it is. Absolutely. If you don't have the spirit of Elohim, then there's no possible way you can say I'm his. And as a matter of fact, if you want to be a part of him, you're glad to patiently tarry and wait, do whatever you got to do until you receive set apart spirit. And if Messiah is in you, the body truly is dead. On account of what? Sin. So what's been attached to the flesh? What's the sentence attached to the flesh? Death. No getting out of it. Because what did God say to Adam? The day you eat, you shall surely die. Do you know folks been dying from that time to now? When you woke up this morning and you looked at your clock for whatever time, just think about when you looked at your clock for the first time this morning. My clock's on wife's side over there, and I can't see it because if any light hits me, I'm up. And it's a digital clock, so she keeps it on her end. I can't see it. So my eyes open, and I got to decide, do I want to peek up over her and look that way? Because if I do, it's, oh, I'm up. And sometimes I'll play the game. I say, oh, yeah, I feel good. I must have rested. I look, 1 o'clock. I went, you got to be kidding me. Do you understand that when you looked at that clock, somebody around the world died? You turned away and looked at it again, somebody else died. You turned away and looked at it again, somebody else died. Death is constant. It's a constant thing because death was attached to flesh. And yet here you are. You brought your flesh here today. You brought your flesh here today. That's a very powerful thing. Because the only one that didn't ever want to come today is your flesh. It's the one that's been giving excuses to you all your life. It's created more problems for you than your most problem enemy that you think you got. Some people say, I hate my enemy. I can strangle them. Go in the mirror, put your hand around your neck and choke yourself out. Have a good time. Because if you hate your enemy, you don't know what you're talking about. Because nobody's done you more wrong than you. I thought I'd go a little further this morning. And if the spirit of him, did I read 10? And if Messiah is in you, the body truly is dead on account of sin. But the spirit is life on account of righteousness. What brings life to us? Righteousness. What's the Torah? Righteous. Did I not read it in the same chapter? In the same book? Did I just not read that? So are we to have to remember these things? The righteousness of the Torah. And here he says in this verse, He says, and if Messiah is in you, the body is truly dead on account of sin. Now, it almost seems like, okay, we got a little problem here. If Messiah is in me, then I ought to have some relief from the death. But the only relief is the same path he took. I must take. And that's resurrection. Other than that, it's still attached to flesh. Death attached itself to flesh. The only hope you got for resurrection is you have to have righteousness. So you see, it seems like we have a dilemma here. But it's not a dilemma. It's the fact, it's just the simple fix. You got to quit wanting what you want and want more of what he wants. That's a simple fix. Quit wanting more of what you want and want what he wants. What does he want? He wants to meet with you at certain times. How do we know that? He told us. He told us about appointed times. What does flesh want? I want somebody to tell me what I need to do to be a Christian. And so we have lists of people who gladly take your money to tell you. And so here at our place, we believe this. Okay, I like that. Let me try that. And you get in there and you kind of don't fit. And you get out of that. And you go find the next one. And whatever they say. And you're trying to find somebody else to tell you rather than what God said. If Messiah is in you, the body truly is dead on account of sin. So why is the body dead? So we're all dead men walking. Every one of us here. We're all dead men walking. But the Spirit is life on account of righteousness. Once the righteousness of the Torah comes in, the Spirit is now life. And it's important for us to understand these concepts. They become real to us. They help us. We can understand these concepts. They minister to our life and bring about change in our life. And it says in verse 11, and if the Spirit of him who raised Yeshua from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Messiah from the dead shall also give life to your what? Mortal body. Why is the term mortal body used there? He's going to give life to your mortal body. Because your body is mortal. Not immortal. It's mortal. That means it, you shall surely die. But he's trying to tell us, if you build this relationship up with the set apart spirit while you're living, while you're breathing, while you can make choices on what's good or bad, life or death, blessing or cursing, and you get control of always wanting to go to the negative, and you get control of it, now you're building a righteous relationship, and guess what's still going to happen? You die. He says, this is what's going to happen. He who raised Messiah from the dead shall also give to your mortal body through the Spirit, give life to your mortal body through his Spirit dwelling in you. His what dwelling in you? Spirit. His Ruach has to dwell in you. When you have the Ruach dwelling in you, you die. It makes no difference because the same Spirit that raised Messiah is going to be the same Spirit that's activated to bring life to your mortal body. Because we all have to understand that God can't change the rules in the middle of the game. And he's not going to do that to help to fix. That's why people get saved and you do all the right things after that and you die. Because that was the rule. The day you eat, you shall surely die. Now we know that we better do something while we're living to fix before we die the problem with death. Because once you die, Ecclesiastes says there's no thought, there's no work, there's nothing done at death, after death. It's over. So what you didn't do, don't get done. The relationship you didn't build, don't get built. Nobody can pray for that to happen for you. We've all been given opportunity to have that right now. That's why it's important for you to be where you are right now. That's why it's important that you have to don't do things because you like it. You take that approach, you cannot be in the very spot that God wants you to be. There's sometimes you may not like what you hear. But we need to hear it. So then, brothers, we are not debtors to the flesh. We are not debtors to the flesh. To live according to the flesh. What do you owe your flesh that you always got to do what it says? It's like we're debtors to it. You're not debtors to your flesh. That you got to live according to the flesh's dictate, the flesh's desires, what the flesh wants to do. Let me tell you what the flesh never wants to go to Shabbat service at all. The flesh never wants to be in an appointed time. And remember, Shabbat's an appointed time. Never wants to go to appointed times. Never. Never wants to go. The flesh don't understand the things of God. Can't. It can't. That model that God made of clay, he took the dirt and mist, made that clay, then he breathed the breath of life into, then it animated. That perfect connection was made from the spirit of man, which was the breath of God, the spirit of God, the breath of man. The breath of God now in man is the spirit of man. Connecting with God's spirit was perfect. It was the most perfect thing. And God saw that he made man in his own image and his own likeness. He made them both male and female, made he them. Not this crazy stuff going around the world today that you have to be forced to give attention to. It's absolutely nonsense. Absolute nonsense. When you ask a person a simple question, what's a man and what's a woman? And they go, well, there's many ways to answer that. Let's see. I mean, when that starts like that, you already know you got your crazy. The Bible's very clear. Very clear. God created male and female. He created them. He said, a man shall leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife. They shall become one flesh. So we understand that concept. That's why the concept of sin passing on, it shouldn't be mind-blowing to us. Whether it passed from Adam to Eve or Eve to Adam, they were one flesh. It didn't matter which one ate. It's not written, that's how it went down, but that's not to preach that women don't know what they're doing. Because Eve ate and she, you know, no, it didn't matter who ate. The consequence would have been the same. But because it went the way it went, God had to set structure of authority up. And that's what he did. And so what we see happening here, what we see happening in this eighth chapter, we're not debtors to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. Verse 13, for if you live according to the flesh, you are going to die. Now we know we're going to die regardless, but he's emphasizing something here. You can die before you should die. This is what's being emphasized. If you constantly live according to the flesh, you're going to die sooner than you should die. Does anybody know anybody that you believe with all your heart they should still be living today? Why is it they die before they die? Well, God must have needed an angel. See, that's how we soothe ourselves. We don't speak the truth. We're not trying to soothe our spirit. We're trying to soothe our flesh. So we pile it on top of God must have needed an angel. He needed another star, and we're trying to soothe ourselves. And it's just no truth there. The Bible says if you live according to the flesh, you're going to die. Now, we already knew that was applied. Death was applied to us anyway. We all knew we were going to die. What is he saying there? You're going to die before you should. Before your time, you're going to die. I've seen it happen many times. Many times. If you live according to the flesh, you're going to die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body. Now, the deeds of the body, there could be the desires of the body or the desires of the flesh. Again, you got to put to death those things. You shall live. Very clear statements here. Now he goes into this 14th verse. For as many as are led by the Spirit of Elohim, these are the sons of Elohim. Let me see that. This is a qualifying verse. This verse right here is important. It should be valuable to our life. Very qualifying. Because it says, for as many as are led by the Spirit of Elohim, these are the sons of Elohim. Well, that word led, we ought to know, we ought to figure out what that means, to be led by the Spirit. The word is ago. A-G-O. It is properly to lead by implication, to bring, drive, reflectively go, specifically pass, or pass time, or figuratively induce, or be, bring forth, carry, let, go, keep, lead away, or be open. Again, G71 is a go, to lead, take with one, to lead by laying hold of, and this way to bring to a point of destination. So you're either going to be led by the flesh or you're going to be led by the Spirit. Now the qualifier is if you're led by the Spirit, you become a son of Elohim. So what was Joseph representing standing before the most powerful man in the world? A son of Elohim. You don't think that Elohim's going to not give his son time to shine? This is what he's about to do for Yosef. And so you and I, we have to be led by the Spirit. And so when we get saved, we come to God and we say, I'm ready to serve God. You know, if I ask you today, are you ready to serve God? Yeah, I'm ready. You know, you have an agreement. Okay, well, if you're ready, you have to take his yoke. Take his yoke and let him lead you. Then you lose half the crowd that just said yes. Because the moment you got to commit to being led, it gets a little difficult because now you're not driving. You ever heard somebody say, I'd go, but I need to drive. If I ain't driving, I ain't going. If you ever answer them like this, well, good, we didn't want you to go anyway, they'd quit saying that. Because when you don't drive, you're relinquishing something. And you're not comfortable with that. Well, you can't take that same approach in the relationship with God. Because he's not going to let you drive when he's the master driver. When you've been known as a society to crash. You don't get to open the door and say, scoot over, Jesus. Get on that side over there. I got this. Strap in. That's how we treat him sometimes. You don't get to do that. Now, there was a famous song came out by this singer, an idol. It sort of goes like, Jesus, take the wheel. Of course you want me to take the wheel. You done got it in a heavy spin on ice. Sure you want, oh, Jesus, take the wheel. Because you won't relinquish the authority because your flesh won't allow you. Your flesh wants you to think you can do anything. You're invincible. You can't be killed. You know, when you were young and tough, you went in the bar, you hit a few drinks, you could beat the biggest guy in the barroom. Then you went home the next day and you had both black eyes. And you figured that wasn't true. Sometimes you got to face reality like that. But what we have to do is remember, when you come to serve him, you're not in charge. Stuff that you want to do, sometimes you don't get to do it. You know Joseph? He didn't get to do. Where was his girlfriend mentioned? Does anybody see his girlfriend yet? What about his wife? What about his family members? He lost all that. And he's getting older. The whole time he's getting older. And all these opportunities. He didn't have date night. He didn't have none of that. But he decided when he was put in the pit, I can't get myself out. I'm going to die. There's no way I can get myself out. Nothing I can do to help me get out of this situation. So I'm not going to keep trying to do it anymore. If I die in this pit, I'm going to die knowing I love God and I'm serving him. But I'm not going to have an attitude about it. I'm not going to be mad about it. I'm not going to be upset about it. I'm going to say to God, I give you all the praise and glory. And a little bit at a time. And he went through that at every level. We can go on. We've had all the stories. We went through them all. But Yosef, now he's standing before Pharaoh. And what's at stake? A global crisis. A global crisis. What's at stake around the world? A global crisis. What are we doing about it? What's our prayer life like concerning the global crisis we're facing today? Do you have a consistent, not I mentioned it today and you're going to be right on it tomorrow, but then eventually you'll quickly forget about it. What's that consistent, repetitive, get outside. Remember we talked about this last, I didn't go into detail about that, but you look up the word ruach, it's the resh and the het. Combine these two together, it's man outside. Outside. And the reason he's outside, because when he's going to take the goats, and he's going to take them to eat. He's going to follow this pattern. He's going to bring them back. The next day, he's going to follow the same pattern. He's not going to change. He'll bring them back. The next day, he'll follow the same pattern and bring them back. And in Nepal, we've seen this happen. After you've done that so many times, he don't even have to go out with them. They follow the same pattern over and over again. They turn the goats loose, they all come back. The next, how do you know to come back? Well, we did it with them first 50 times. That's the word ruach. What does it do? What does the Spirit do? It creates consistency. It creates consistency in your life. And we have to have consistency. Without the set apart Spirit creating consistency, guess who's not going to create consistency? Your flesh. Your flesh is the inconsistent part. So when something's happening, let me give you my perspective. When I look out, the consistency, when people's consistent with coming to Shabbat, when I see the inconsistency, I can chalk it up on our little chart that was from the flesh or the Spirit or the flesh or the Spirit. And now at the end of the month, I can evaluate. Now I evaluate. Let me tell you what we're good at. We're good at evaluating somebody else, but not ourselves. We get very consistent evaluating other people, but we don't evaluate ourselves. Because God knows we can't be near as bad as them ever. What we have to do is we have to look at ourselves. That's where the start is. That's what Yeshua did. He looked at himself. He understood if I'm inconsistent, then I might have a, if I have inconsistent disciples, then who's, what are we going to cry about? I was inconsistent. We got to have some standard set. And that's what Yeshua did. He created a standard, and he was not going to be inconsistent. That's why Yeshua went to Shabbat every Shabbat. Consistency. When he prayed, he was consistent in praying. And do we need a man who's going to be consistent? When you got 7 years of good and you better be saving, you got to have a man who's going to be consistent. That's why you had to have somebody with the Spirit, because the Spirit sets the bar to be consistent. I'm going to stop because I'm going to get started on all week, next week's. CD just went out.